Grace, Father, we just come to you. We come to you as a needy people. Lord, we have a country, Father, that's just in need of revival. That's what we need for you. Lord, I'm nothing without you, Father, and I just ask that you guide the words that I give, that you open up the ears and those who are here. And Lord, we just have a nation that we just pray that you can take the scales off our eyes, and Lord, we can see the light and the truth of who you are, and be drawn closer to you. Lord, we just ask you to be with us as we give this presentation, and Lord, we just give all glory and honor to you. We ask all this in the name of our precious Lord Jesus. Amen. Amen. Well, I'm here because of what happened last week in King, North Carolina. I've actually I've got a friend that lived right here, and he's been keeping me abreast of it for a year or so. So let's just go over. I'm going to go over a term that was used in the 1770s that has fallen out of use or misuse and all that, and that is this word right here, tyranny. What's tyranny? It says, and this is from John Locke in 1691, so this one has been around for a while. And it says, as usurpation is the exercise of power which another person has a right to, tyranny is the exercise of power beyond right. There's no authority to exercise that power. So usurpation is someone, the wrong person holding the other person's office, or the wrong person doing someone else's job. Tyranny is doing something you do not have a right to. And tyranny in the hands of powerful people is a very, very dangerous thing. But this is why we're here. This is the an accident with the complaint and the order, the judgment of what happened here in King, North Carolina. And I want to, and everyone here is familiar with what happened. Basically, the separation of church and state issue that came along. And how many people understand the relationship we had when this nation was founded between the federal government or the national government and the state as far as church and state? Fundamentally, just to keep it brief, the states could do anything they wanted, right? The federal government was limited, that it couldn't have a national religion and it couldn't do anything on a national level. And of course, since it was a limited government, it didn't make that much difference. Anyways. And just to back that up, we just want to go ahead and just see what some of the founders said. This is John Adams. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And now that we see, we've had a couple decades of it being run and operated for the benefit of immoral and irreligious people, what direction do we see us going in? If you were to graph the direction of this country, just think of a graph up here. Here we are in 1776. Morally, what direction are we going in?
Down.
Down. Financially, fiscally, what direction are we going in?
Down.
Freedom-wise. Okay? Does it take a rocket scientist to figure out if we stay on this path, where it's going to lead to? We are on a path to our own destruction. And we're going at it at warp speed with no one knowing how to stop it. And I'm going to show you how we can stop it if we can get people involved. James Madison, we have staked the whole of our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government. Upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God.
Amen.
Now, what can we do with the Ten Commandments in public places nowadays? Not even allowed to show them anywhere. Is that in flagrant opposition to the founders' intent? Patrick Henry. It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. John Jay, first Supreme Court Justice, and one of the authors of the Federalist Papers, Americans should select and prefer Christians as their rulers. What are some of the evidences we have that this nation was intended to be Christian? Anybody ever seen an official get an oath? Where are they putting their left hand until the last 25 years? Away from the Bible. Okay? Why is it good to have, you know, anytime you have a state or a nation, it's a common people with common beliefs. Okay? Otherwise, you have the maxim in play of divide and govern. If you can get enough divisions among the people to where they're arguing enough, then you've got to have a heavy-handed government to keep them from arguing, keep peace, because they don't get along. The old adage, good fences make good neighbors, you know, you stay on that side, we stay on this side. And because in this nation, for Christians to be our rulers, then we have a moral foundation upon which they can hold them accountable for getting off of. I'm going to just give you the basic change, philosophically or theologically, that happened in this country from 1776 to now. We were a nation of a Christian nation where we were free, we had liberty to do anything we want as long as it didn't violate God's laws. We were at liberty. We had a foundation. We had a moral foundation. And it was what God said. Now, we have freedom without God. God is nowhere to be found. You can do anything you want because you are the highest source. Whatever you want is. And that's humanism. We went from a Christian people, a Christian country, to a humanist country. So that's fundamentally what happened. And further to this, of what our nation was founded on, the American state has a Christian foundation. Let's just read a couple of constitutions. I could go through several. But I'm just going to do a couple of them here. This is the Constitution of Delaware, 1776. It says, every person who shall be chosen a member of either house before taking his seat shall take the following oath. And also make and subscribe the following declaration. I, so-and-so, do profess faith in God the Father and Jesus Christ, his only Son, and in the Holy Ghost, one God, blessed forevermore. And I do acknowledge the Holy Scriptures of the Old and New Testament to be given by divine inspiration. Does that sound like separation of church and state? As it's being interpreted today. Okay? Constitution of Delaware. Constitution of South Carolina, 1778. The Christian Protestant religion shall be deemed and is hereby constituted and declared to be the established religion of this state. Does that go against what we're taught? What this nation was about? We're taught that you can't have an established religion in a state. Yes, you can. You just can't have it in the federal government, is the way this nation was founded. So the limitations of the First Amendment, which the city of King was charged with violating, basically violated that with church and state. And we're going to explain why that was. But what about here in North Carolina? Constitution of December 18, 1776, that no person who shall deny the being of God or the truth of the Protestant religion or the divine authority of either the Old or New Testaments, or who shall hold religious principles incompatible with the freedom and safety of the state, shall be capable of holding any office or place of trust or profit in the civil department within the state. Is this a Christian state? Okay, now, let's make a little division here. Does this mean non-Christians can't be members of the state? No. You can vote. Non-Christians can vote. They can be members of the body politic, the body of people of the state. But they can't hold office because they don't believe our founding moral principle. Right? Yeah. So they might want to start making laws that violate God. So we want Christians holding office because they're the lawmakers and they're going to at least keep us on that moral foundation, not going off of it. And here's the famous amendment right here. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. This was, is not a prohibition on individual states. Did it look like this was a prohibition on the states we just mentioned? No, because they're the ones that said, we agree with that, and that does not violate who we are. Okay? We the people, we won't be ruled by God, ruled by man. We got to make that choice. Because what are we ruled by now? Man. How's it feel? We're either going to be ruled by God or we're going to be ruled by man. And we got to make that choice. Let's get back here to where we are. City King, here's the order put out by the court. This is in the text of the order. And it talks about the establishment clause. It says the establishment clause provides that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, U.S. Constitution Amendment 1. Although applicable originally only against the federal government, the establishment clause has been incorporated against the state by the 14th Amendment. This is actually in this court ruling. So he's talking about the cross statue, the Christian flag display, the annual war on this, and all that. When, this tells you something, when was North Carolina and South Carolina converted to where we could have religion as a founding of this state to we couldn't have religion as a founding of the state? This is the 14th Amendment. Because that, for some reason, some way, made the establishment of religion apple to the states. Does that make sense to anyone? Hopefully by the end of this, it will. Yeah. And again, here's the conclusion of this order by the Judge Beatty. This therefore ordered, blah, 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 that it's in violation of the establishment clause as applied to North Carolina to the 14th Amendment. Here's my law read. This is the way this nation was originally founded. And the way this graph works is, who's the author of all law?
God.
Who's the creator of all law? Who's the creator of all? God. Okay? So you have God. God created his law. And also God created man. Now, this is a whole list of hierarchy. Who's in charge? Working your way down. Because God is a God of order. You know, you do have hierarchies amongst the people. And we're to give honor to those above us. God created man, and God allowed man that we can have our own laws. You know, God didn't recommend it when we wanted a king, or Israel wanted a king. I said, okay, whatever you want. Y'all can do it. Don't recommend it. Go for it. And ever since then, we've been making laws and having governments and filled with men. And in this country, we've got our state constitutions. We have our constitutions. We have our state citizens. And they got together to create the federal constitution. And each one of these is supposed to be serving the other. Service is upward in this. Federal government is supposed to be servicing a servant of the states. The states are, a man is servants of God. Okay, so it just works its way down. And the way this is set up is we got the Articles 1 through 7 and the Bill of Rights, and Amendments 1 through 10 sitting here. This is a representation of the federal constitution. Article 1 is Congress. And the way this graph works is each one of these squares is an authorized delegation of power where Congress passed a law that didn't violate anything. It was lawful, constitutional, lawful delegation of authority. You can see that they pass these laws, they get more laws. And then you see these circles. What are these circles? These circles are things that aren't authorized by the federal government to do. You know, saying that we can't have a display of the Ten Commandments. Limiting the rights of people to keep and bear arms. You know, Second Amendment stuff. These are all these usurpations and having the Department of Education. All these things that they've got. And what I want you to see is all these circles, all these usurpations that we see of how government is working, I want you to see they all lead back to one spot, one original usurpation. And that spot right there is what we're going to focus on. Because right now we got people out here, here's King of North Carolina with the establishment clause, how they do it, and you're trying to figure out how to get them to fix that. We got a lot of Second Amendment people over here, here's the Second Amendment, Brady Bill, and all those things. They're fighting that. And we're spending hundreds of thousands of man hours fighting every one of these usurpations individually. And what I say we ought to do is, why don't we go for the root? Go for the original authority. And where do we think that original authority might be by the reading of the King's lawsuit? 14th Amendment. Let's go to the 14th Amendment and see what happened there. Because this is the way this country actually works. The federal government and all these usurpations are ruling over the top of us. The federal government is over the state. And where's God? They want God totally out of there. The federal government, the national government, wants to be the sovereign and the supreme entity, where if you have a need, you go to it, versus God being the sovereign in control of the destinies of man and nations. And they say, don't go to God. Come to us. We'll take care of it. How many people trust the national government? Okay. Let's look at what other cases the 14th Amendment has, the Supreme Court has ruled on. Lawrence versus Texas, 2003. Stopping laws were shut down because of violation of the 14th Amendment. Instead of violation of the conclusion, we conclude that it violated the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. This is what the foundation of gay rights, gay marriage, was a violation of what? 14th Amendment. Roe versus Wade. Violation of due process laws of the 14th Amendment. Slave Ten Commandments, Stone versus Graham. Violation of the first part of Lemon and Kirk's death, and thus the assassination clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution, as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. So, Slave Ten Commandments, gone because of the 14th Amendment. Abington School versus Shep, or Murray versus Gillette. This is Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Yep.
Taking prayer out of school. Struck down as unconstitutional through the 14th Amendment. We hold the practice of that issue and the laws requiring them unconstitutional under the Assassin Clause as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. How many people know what the 14th Amendment says? I got one. I got two. Okay. The 14th Amendment is actually a fairly large amendment. It's the largest amendment. It's got the most paragraphs and words in it. But the very first sentence of it is the one that most people have heard. And it says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. How many people here are citizens of the United States? Okay. In 1776, how many North Carolinians were primarily citizens of the United States? They were. They were state citizens. No fundamental change. Originally, the states were composed of state citizens. Now, every state is composed of a United States citizen, and a United States citizen is a national citizen subject to Congress. Now, it makes sense that limitations of Congress and the Bill of Rights and the Establishment Clause now apply to states. You're citizens of those people who are bound by them. So, what we're going to do here is we're going to point everything at the American Civil War. And I'm here to tell you that the American Civil War is, we are taught that the only way you are to look at the issues of 1860 to 1868 is through a moral lens and not a political lens. Don't look at politically what happened. It was a moral issue. And I'm here to tell you, we've been hoodwinked into believing that. What the 14th Amendment did, or what the Civil War did, was it destroyed the foundation, destroyed the Constitution. Think about it. Abraham Lincoln waged a war. What was the principle upon which he waged war? In the Declaration of Independence, all government of right comes from the consent of who? The government. All government of right comes from the consent of the government. The people have a right to alter or abolish their forms of government whenever it becomes necessary for their freedom and safety. Okay? We have some deep South states that decide to secede. What secede mean? What's the official definition of secession?
Separation.
Formal withdrawal. Formal separation. To separate. There's secession in the history, American history. Formal withdrawal from any organization.
Yes.
July 4th, 1776. Declaration of Independence is a secession document. We are formally withdrawing. And also the Declaration of Independence is in legal terms, an indictment. It's a list of the crimes of the crown. You violated this. Because what's the fundamental relationship between a government and a people? The fundamental relationship between a government and a people. Because, I mean, everyone should know this. This should be Civics 101. What should the government expect out of you? And in return, what should you expect out of the government? Should you expect tyranny? There's a reciprocal agreement. And this reciprocal agreement was in the very first sentence of the original North Carolina Constitution. December 18, 1776. And says, whereas allegiance and protection are in their nature reciprocal, one of right should be refused when the other is withdrawn. Now, what did I just say? It says there's a reciprocal agreement. You know, I've got to agree with you. It's reciprocal. You do this, I do that. If you violate it, it's gone. If you don't do your part, I don't have to do my part. If I don't do my part, you don't have to do your part. So, let me say it again. Whereas allegiance and protection are in their nature reciprocal, the one of right should be refused when the other is withdrawn. Allegiance. We give allegiance to the state. We give allegiance to the state in a multitude of ways. Taxes, support when they need an army. We got to go fight to defend our state. Give allegiance and support. In return, what do we give? Protection of our rights. They protect our rights. Okay? So what was going on in 1772 to 1776? A lot of abuses and usurpations. They were not protecting our rights. So we said, you broke the contract. You cannot demand allegiance from us. Okay? So that's why they wrote the Declaration of Independence. Is you've committed these crimes, therefore we are in a right, ought to be a free and independent people. You violate it. Okay? Governments are created to protect rights, not rule over people and become tyrants. Do we have another case of secession in our history? Was there any other formal leading of organizations? Like the Articles of Confederation. Weren't we originally under the Articles of Confederation? Coming out of the Revolution?
Yeah.
How well did that work? Articles didn't work. Why didn't they work? There were two reasons. One is there was no effective way to raise revenue. That's why Washington just never had any money to fight the war. They couldn't, you know, they had to raise revenue for the Navy to defend us, to build forts and arsenals and all this. And there was no way to dictate it from the states. And number two is you had to have, in order to amend the Articles, you had to have unanimous consent. All 13. So when they wanted to have an amending of the Articles of Confederation to make it better, Rhode Island didn't show up. So what could they do? Nothing. What's the Declaration of Independence say? The people have a right to alter their form of government when it comes necessary to secure their rights. Well, we want to amend this. We got one little state here holding us hostage, and this is where the Constitutional Convention kind of grew out of that problem. And so what did they say in the Constitutional Convention? If we go to Article 7 of the Constitution, it says once nine states ratify this, because here's what happens. We had 13 states underneath the Articles of Confederation, and they proposed a constitution. They proposed the U.S. Constitution. We're under this form of government. We're bound to it. We can't change it unless we have unanimous consent. And what's the official name of the Articles of Confederation? It's the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union. It's perpetual. You can't get out of it. But what do? They propose a constitution. But they said, what's the remedy? We'll send the Constitution to the states. And once nine states ratify this, then it becomes binding on who? All 13? On nine. Once nine. Whoever ratifies it is who it becomes binding on. So once nine states ratify the Constitution, it only becomes binding on the people who ratify it because the others haven't consented. You can't bring someone along without their consent in law. Well, by the time, because of how long it took to travel, by the time they had inaugurated the new government, 11 states had ratified it. Okay? And when the United States government, as we know it today, prior to 1868, when it was inaugurated, how many states were in the American Union? 11. Which states were not in the United States of America the day that the Constitution was inaugurated? North Carolina was not a member state of the United States when it was inaugurated. We were a foreign, independent country. And so was Rhode Island. Hard to get them to do anything. So what Article 7 is, I think it's 7. I can't remember. I've lost count. I think it's Article 7. Once 9 states ratify it, is that a secession article? We're under the Articles of Confederation. This document says once 9 states ratify it, it becomes binding on them. What did those 9 states just do from the Articles? Formally withdrew. We're not in that anymore. Is that secession? Okay. What crime did these South states do when they seceded from the American Union? Well, they didn't do anything. There was no crime. So what was Abraham Lincoln waging a war on? The principle that all government right comes with the consent of the governor. The founding principle is all government right does not come from your consent. You have no authority to withdraw. All government right comes with the consent of the United States Congress. Therefore, you're in rebellion to lawful authority, and we're going to send the United States military down there and put you back in the good standing. Does that sound like the principles of free government?
No.
Do you understand why in 1861 they called Lincoln a tyrant?
Yeah.
He's exercising a power he had, sort of had no authority to coerce a free people against their will. It violates all the principles of this country. It's a moral issue. And the ends justify the means.
Also, there was no Congress when Lincoln sent the warships out. They were on recession and in recess. And he didn't call them back in until July 3rd.
Yeah. Good point. One of the issues, when I grew up, one of the things that I was really mad at my Southern forebears for were firing upon Fort Sumter. They started the war. But they just wouldn't have done that, you know. But then, after I started learning a little history, I find out that Abraham Lincoln had sent 4 warships to Charleston Harbor to resupply it with force if necessary. And South Carolina had seceded from the Union in December of 1860. This is 4 months later. They're trying to say, okay, let's negotiate this agreement to leave. Let's negotiate this out. Abraham Lincoln saying there will be no negotiation. You have no authority to be out. I'm going to send troops. And he sent the Harriet Lane, the ships for the Harriet Lane, the Pawnee, the Powhatan, and little was sort of leaving. And one of them ended up having to go, was actually redeployed down to the port. But there were actually 2 U.S. Navy warships in Charleston Harbor when the batteries started firing upon Fort Sumter. It was not just, they were there to militarily resupply. Do you have a right to defend yourself if someone's out there looks like they're going to invade you?
Yeah.
Who started the war? It was not South Carolina. Abraham Lincoln, I don't want to go into a lot of history here. And really, what I want everyone to come out of this with is, you probably don't know enough of your history to really understand what was going on. And so what we end up defaulting to is what we're told happened. Okay? And who's telling us this? The U.S. government education system. How many people trust the U.S. government education system to tell you the truth? Okay? There's an agenda to go on. We want to learn the real history. We want to learn the political history. We want to learn how the federal government got authority to say King North Carolina cannot have a Christian flag or a war memorial with a soldier kneeling at a cross. Why? Well, I want to look at a little bit of the timeline here. I'm going to start getting a little bit into the Reconstruction. On March 1861, he declared the seven southern state ordinances of secession null and void. Based upon the position, the states cannot leave the Union. Once in, you can't get out. July of 1861, both houses of Congress passed resolutions clearly stating that the war is not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. If you'll go look up the official object of the war that passed Congress, they said it was not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. In April, May 1865, the Confederate Army surrendered to overwhelming opposition. December 1865, 11 previous Confederate states are considered back in the Union to the degree that they participate in amending the National Constitution, abolishing slavery. So the war's over in 1865. Washington's position, Congress's position, is that the state never left the Union. The ordinances of secession were null and void. You have never left the Union. Okay? So when the war is over, what do they consider North Carolina to be? In the Union. Well, they proposed the 13th Amendment to abolish slavery. And look at when North Carolina ratified that. December 4th, 1865. Is North Carolina considered a member, participating member of the American Union on December 4th, 1865? What does that say right there? The amendment was ratified December 6, 1865. Yeah, North Carolina was a voting member. We were in the Union December 4, 1865, because we were never at the Union, according to Congress. That's what the whole war was about. We were the one state in rebellion as compared to the Union states, one that wanted to maintain the Union, Union and rebellion. Okay, so Congress considered North Carolina in the Union December 1864 because they sent the 13th Amendment to our legislature and our people, and we ratified it. Do they send proposed amendments to the Constitution to Canada, to Mexico, Jamaica? No, they only send it. Do they send it to the territories? No, they only send it to member states of the Union. U.S. Congress considered North Carolina in the Union December 1865. Peace was declared by presidential proclamation April 2nd, 1866. War is over. Peace is declared. 1866. The 14th Amendment is proposed by the 39th Congress, June 13, 1866, and is rejected by all southern states except Tennessee. Now, here's when North Carolina rejected December 14, 1866. On March 2, 1867, the first Reconstruction Act is passed by Congress in times of peace. Peace is declared, war is over. A lot of people confuse the Reconstruction Act with a war measure. Hey, they wage war, you know, we had to do this. No, this is times of peace. States are in the Union, they're operating, courts are open, everything's happening. So, on March 2nd, 1867, the first Reconstruction Act was passed by Congress in times of peace over the President's veto, declaring that no legal government existed in any of the former Confederate states. Okay? Except Tennessee. So the Reconstruction Act was based upon the principle of Congress's power to conquer and subjugate the southern states' form of government and citizenry. And basically, remember, the outcome of the war was not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. Officially, that's what Congress said. 2 years after the war was over, Congress changed their position. And said, we believe the war was for conquest and subjugation. North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, you're conquered territory. You're no longer a state. '67 is when they declared that. When was the war over? '65. When was peace declared? '66. 1867, Congress saying your states are a null. State of North Carolina, you're a null. You don't exist. How many people read the Constitution? How many people read in there in Article 1, Congress, or legislature, where Congress had the power, Article 1, Section 8, Clause, where does it say they have the power to annul state at their pleasure in time of peace? Is that delegated authority of the United States Congress? Article 4, Section 4 says they're supposed to guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government. Was North Carolina in the union in 1865? They amended the Constitution, 13th Amendment. Hey, in 1866, Congress considered them in the union again. They sent them the 14th Amendment in 1866, you're in the union. But what made Congress mad? They rejected it. Of all the southern states, with the Reconstruction Acts, were all the southern states annulled by the Reconstruction Acts? No. Tennessee was not. Why? Because they ratified the 14th Amendment. So what's the absolute total purpose and function of the 14th Amendment, or the Reconstruction Act? To pass the 14th Amendment. The purpose of this legislation is to pass an amendment to the Constitution. Can we all agree that Congress doesn't have the authority to null state in time of peace? Does anyone consider that an unconstitutional act? Let's just read what an unconstitutional act is. An unconstitutional act is not a law. It confers no rights. It imposes no duties. It affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation and inoperative as though it had never been passed. Therefore, an unconstitutional act purporting to create an office gives no validity to the act of persons acting under the color of its authority. Did the Reconstruction Acts create any offices? They created the entire state of North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia. And as a byproduct, what else did it do? It created new states in New York and Ohio and Minnesota and Vermont. How did it do that? It changed the body politic. What's the body politic? Political body that makes up a state. People the body politics, the political body. People who can vote, participate, people who it protects, people who owe allegiance. That's the body politic. Body politic of New York were the New Yorkers, citizens of New York. After the 14th Amendment, who are the only people who can vote in New York? United States citizens residing in New York. Who's the only people who can vote in North Carolina? This North Carolina is out there today. United States citizens residing in North Carolina. What about citizens of North Carolina? If you declare yourself to be a citizen of North Carolina, you are not allowed to vote in the state of North Carolina. I know. I tested it, and my voter registration was canceled in 1995.
Wow.
And I can do a talk on that, but we don't have time. Here's the Reconstruction Act. Let's go through a couple of the phrases of the Reconstruction Act. Here's a very opening sentence. Here it is. Here's Jack out of Congress. It says, whereas no legal state government or adequate protection for life or property now exists in the realm of states, as they list them all, whereas it's necessary that peace and good order should be enforced in that state until loyal and Republican state governments can be legally established. Is Congress authorized with establishing, well, number one, annulling and then reestablishing new states, new body politics over certain territories of this country? No authority. It doesn't exist. Article 4, Section 4 of the United States are guaranteed to every state in this union a Republican form of government. Was North Carolina in the union on March 1st, 1867? It's in the union. What's Congress's duty? Guarantee it, that body politic, a Republican form of government. March 2nd, 1867, they said, you're out. We're going to create another one and then guarantee it a Republican form of government. It was said that Congress shall guarantee that any state it chooses, any body of people it chooses, no. That's guaranteed that every state in this union. State that's already in the union. We were already in the union. With North Carolina, with any state have entered the union, if it knew that Congress had the power to annul it at its pleasure. Nobody would do that. If you have a company, would you say, you know what, I want to have a little union of companies here, and I'm going to give them the power to annul my company at its pleasure? Who would do that? No one would do that. No one would authorize that kind of power to Congress. No one. Section 5 of the Reconstruction Act, and when that state, this new state they create, by a vote of the legislature elected under its constitution, they could have this new group of people create a new constitution, shall have adopted the amendments to the Constitution of the United States proposed by the 39th Congress and known as Article 14, 14th Amendment, and with that article shall have become part of the Constitution of the United States, said states shall be declared entitled to representation in Congress, the Senators and Representatives. What's that say? First paragraph says you're a null.
Yep.
Second, third, fourth paragraph says here's how you're going to create a new state, have a new constitutional convention. Section 5 says, okay, once you got this new state, we agree that it's a lawful state. We agree with the Constitution. It says your legislature has to come together. They got to bring up the 14th Amendment, and then what do they got to do? Required to ratify it. Before what? Before they can seat senators and representatives. Well, number one, are you a state? But you're not represented. They're not a whole state. This thing that they're creating here. But if we go to Article 4 of the U.S. Constitution, this part here is saying that they're creating a new state. And this is where new states may be admitted by Congress into this union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state without the consent of the legislature of the state. You got a new state entering the union. Did they get consent from the original state of North Carolina? Did we volunteer and say, you know what, we don't like our form of government? We consent to Congress? No, it didn't happen. The original Constitution of North Carolina was never changed by the consent of the free people of North Carolina. No. Okay. That's our remnant people, right there. And right here, we're going to go to Article 5, which this is the same paragraph. And this one talks about how we ratify. Article 5 of the Constitution is how to amend the Constitution. Okay, so here it says, the Congress, who have two-thirds of both houses, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, ratify the legislature of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions of three-fourths thereof, as one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of equal suffrage in the Senate. Well, there's the deprived Senate right there. But, if this right here, the way that they created this, or passed this amendment, is this one of the authorized ways that we said you can amend the Constitution? Hey, you know what? You can propose one, and if some of the states don't want to go for it, then you can annul them. You can create new states of loyal people who really want this, and then they can come in, but they can't really come in until they pass this. Is that the way we amend the Constitution of the United States? Free people amend the Constitution? That's the way an amendment is rammed down your throat by communist countries, dictatorships, tyranny. This is not a process of free people. This is the foundation of our country. When you look on July 4, 1776, and you look at that flag, and you think of the fireworks, and you look at what our founders did, just remember, all that was killed on March 2, 1867. The foundation put in place by our founders was religion. Because this is centralized. Now, how did they pass this? And the people not get really upset and do something about it? How did they pass the Affordable Care Act? And the people not get upset and actually do something? Just go ahead and take it. We're not any different than they were. We just take it. Yeah, I know I've already done it, but I'll just take it. Whatever. We're upset. We got to quit taking it. But again, what I'm showing you is going to be a legal remedy. How many people are feeling good right now? Knowledge should make you feel good. What I want you to do is look at this in a, like a doctor looks at a disease. Don't get emotionally tied to it. I'm just showing you the state. I'm trying to show you what happened. It should be shocking. But don't get emotionally tied to the feeling that goes with it. Because what we want to do is just be, oh, that's what happened. Oh, now what do I know about it? Not, oh my gosh, that's what happened. I need to run and hide. It's done. That's what happened. Or we're going to do that. We just want change. We just want change. Let's talk a little bit about
the purpose of the 14th Amendment. We were told that what the 14th Amendment was supposed to do was to give the black man civil rights, equal rights to the white man. That sound like a bad thing? No, a lot of people go along with that. Okay? Did we just review some court cases about the 14th Amendment earlier? How many more about rights of black men? No. So, did they sell us on a bill of goods for something they had another intention for? And I'm here to say, yes. This is not a black-white issue. It is kind of black-white. That's wrong. But it's not a racial issue. So we're told that the 14th Amendment and Reconstruction Act were designed for the free slave, or were they designed to nationalize citizenship? Here's where the big light bulb ought to go off. How many people know the difference between national government and federal government? Have those two terms kind of blended in there, what we think of? They're kind of synonymous, interchangeable terms. Our founders did not believe that. A federal government is a government of a federation, several sovereign states. A national government is a government of one people. Okay? Federation or one people. Okay? What were we originally? Federalist Papers number 39. Each state ratifying this constitution is considered as a sovereign body independent of all others and only to be bound by its own voluntary acts. In this relation, then, the new constitution will establish a federal and not a national constitution. See how they're very careful. What are we creating here? A federal or a national? And really, as you read the Federalist Paper, you're going to see that in some aspects it's national, in some aspects it's federal. It's national as far as coining money. It's national as far as waging war, imposing imposed and ex post taxes. National. States couldn't do it. It's federal, and that's what gives it limited authority. The states can do whatever they want within their border. Religion, whatever it wants to do. National government can't bother them. Federal Paper number 39 also says the idea of a national government involves in it not only an authority over the individual citizens, but an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things so far as they are objects of lawful government. Among people consolidated into one nation, this supremacy or sovereignty is completely vested in the national legislature, which is what? Congress. In this relation, then, the proposed government cannot be deemed a national one, since its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only. As far as the people were involved, was this designed to be a federal or a national government? If it were a national government, totally, what kind of power would it have over the individual citizen? That is a national government involved not only an authority over the individual citizen, but an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. How many of you feel like that's what we're living under now? Do you feel like the federal government has supremacy over us in everything? Is that what our founders put into place? It was never intended to be like this. Well, we see what I'm talking about here. Well, I'm going to drive this home just a little bit more. Who was responsible for the passage of the 14th Amendment? The radical Republicans. The Republican Party. The Democrats really did pass in 1860. They said, this is a crime. You can't do this. Back then, Republicans were big government. It's all switched over. But Republicans did this. The radical Republicans. And who was one of these guys? This guy by the name of James G. Blaine. He was a representative from Maine. He was Secretary of State, representative. He wrote two books, Political Discussions, 1856 to 1886, and 20 Years of Congress, 1861 to 1881. He was a congressman. 1861 to 1881. He wrote his autobiography. And he talks about this. He loves Reconstruction. They love the 14th Amendment. Okay, this is the one guy that says, and he's going to explain to you what the 14th Amendment was supposed to do in his book. The book was published in 1884. Okay. This is a speech he gave at a mass meeting in Skowhegan in May, August 29, 1866, on proposed 14th Amendment. Remember, Reconstruction hadn't happened yet. It hadn't even really been voted on. It was proposed in June of 1866, 14th Amendment. So he's going back home, and he says, here's what this new amendment means, you know, this U.S. citizenship. He says, in making this extension of citizenship, we are not confining the breadth and scope of our efforts to the Negro. It is for the white man as well. We intend to make citizenship national. What happens if they get national citizenship? They get supreme authority over all people, of all states. If you become a citizen of Congress, if you become a United States citizen. Okay? It's not mincing words. This is the original intent. This is before anything happens. This is before the amendments passed. He's saying this. And he published that. In one of his own books, his autobiography, he says this: as the vicious theory of state rights that is constantly at enmity with the true spirit of nationality, the organic law of the Republic, what's the organic law of the Republic? Constitution, should be so amended that no standing room for the heresy. What heresy? State rights.
Yeah.
So that no standing room for the heresy of state rights would be left. Now, how many people out there are familiar with people who say, hey, we got state rights? We got the 10th Amendment crap. Okay? What's he saying the 14th Amendment and Reconstruction were designed to do about state rights? Get rid of it. And then he's got this. The first section of the Constitutional Amendment, talking about the 14th, which includes these invaluable provisions, is in fact a new charter of liberty to the citizens of the United States. Is the utter destruction of the pestilent heresy of state rights, which constantly menaced the prosperity and even the existence of the Republic, and is the formal bestowment of nationality upon the wide federal system which led to our federal revolution against Great Britain. How many of you were taught this in school? Is this something worth learning? Are you beginning to understand why a ruling was against King? We don't have what we have. It was all changed by the 14th Amendment. This is what this amendment did.
And why did the Supreme Court hear this case about the legality of the Reconstruction Acts?
Oh, we're going to get into that. We'll get into it. J.G. Blaine goes on. J.G. Blaine is my friend on this topic. He says, opening section of the 14th Amendment of law, complex and contradictions on this question. What's the question? Where does, in the United States, where does your citizenship come from primarily? Does it come from your state? Or does it come from the national government? So that's the question they're talking about when he says the question presented. He says, opening section of the 14th Amendment of law, complex and contradictions on this question, by a comprehensive declaration which defined national citizenship and gave to it precedence of the citizenship of a state. And this is a quote from the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the states wherein they reside. These pregnant words distinctly reverse the origin and character of American citizenship. Does it sound like, hey, this is a fundamental overthrow of what we have? This is not what we have. This is, you know, it's a fundamental change. The origin and character of American citizenship, instead of a man being a citizen of the United States because he was a citizen of one state, he is now made a citizen of any state in which he might choose to reside because he is antecedently a citizen of the United States. That's the fundamental change the 14th Amendment did. It took us from a federation of sovereign states with their own sovereign body politics, North Carolinians in North Carolina, South Carolinians in South Carolina, New Yorkers in New York, and said, we're changing that. Everyone is a United States citizen. So now you have, New York is composed of what? United States citizens. South Carolina is composed of what? United States citizens. California is composed of what? United States citizens. Okay? So, if a United States citizen has a right to an abortion in Texas, where else does a United States citizen have a right to abortion? Anywhere they are. Because originally it was, if Texas says abortion is legal here, and Florida says it's not, because they're Floridians, they're not United, they're not Texans. Citizens of Florida can say, we say no. Do you understand it? When you change it to everybody doing one body, is the rights of one person in any state, if they get that right, recognized, gay marriage, okay, and they're a United States citizen, all they got to do is move to another state that says gay marriage is illegal, and they say, strike that amendment. It's prejudice against United States citizens. It's the way it works. Oh. Right here, James C. Blaine is talking about these new states that were created by Reconstruction. North Carolina being one of them. These new constitutions. He says, all were ordained in the spirit of liberty. All prohibited the existence of any form of slavery. Well, that's really nice. Slavery was abolished in 1865. This is 1868. You know, it's like, okay. And all hardly recognized the supreme sovereignty of the national government as having been indisputably established by the overthrow of the rebellion, which was undertaken to confirm the adverse theory of state practice. Now, part of the talk I left out here was, what was the object of the war? The object of the war that passed Congress in July of 1861 said that this war is not prosecuted on our part in any spirit of oppression or for any purpose of conquest or subjugation, nor to overthrow or interfere with the rights or established institutions of the states. Okay? Object of the war. Because they had to convince New York farm boys, Vermont farm boys, Ohio farm boys to fight a war. Do you think those boys were going to go fight a war against state rights? So Congress officially said the war was not to overthrow or interfere with the rights of states. Okay? All those Yankees, soldiers, fought to preserve state rights. Unless someone thinks that, you know, all those New Yorkers said, you know what, I really hate New York being off Congress. I'd much rather be under Congress. You think they were fighting for that? Okay. What's happening here in 1867? Congress is sitting on their graves. They were just pawns to nationalize citizenship and make everyone subject to Congress. Annul the Constitution in its practical application, which is what the City of Kings saw. I see the words, and that's a limitation on Congress. How come they're applying it to the states? Here's why. That's your question. On several occasions, the Constitution and the Reconstruction Acts were attempted to be adjudicated. In other words, go before a judge. Every attempt has been met with obstruction of justice. Let's just read it. Now, wait a second. What's the function of the Supreme Court when the founders set it up? It's supposed to be a bulwark between encroaching, usurping legislative or executive, and between them and the people. You know, we're here, the Supreme Court is here to guard them against the usurpations of the legislature. Okay? Function of the Supreme Court, let's keep and protect the rights of the people. What's the function of the government? Protect our rights, right? We give allegiance, they protect our rights. State of Georgia said, hey, we're going to try and stop this. They sued the federal government, they sued the War Department, Edwin Stanton, Secretary of War, Ulysses S. Grant, the Attorney General, to stop Reconstruction, because Reconstruction was the deployment, the redeployment of the United States military into the states to make this happen. The Supreme Court said, a bill to restrain the defendants from carrying into execution certain acts of Congress, the Reconstruction Act, inasmuch as such execution would annul and totally abolish the existing state government of Georgia, is not within the jurisdiction of this court. Anybody want to say hooray for the Supreme Court? The bulwark protecting the rights of the people. And this is my favorite. Ex parte McCarville. McCarville was an editor of a Mississippi newspaper, and he was arrested for writing in his newspaper that he was against this new government that was being created by the Reconstruction. I'm against it. Actually, I don't know why he wrote it, but I'm sure it was not what the federal government wanted. And he was arrested for impeding Reconstruction. Who defends the United States government against an action against it? The Attorney General, right? The Attorney General. Yeah, he defends it. You know, we passed this, you challenge it, I defend it. I mean, is the President supposed to go out there and defend it? No, the Attorney General. The legal branch, well, what happened? Henry Stansberry was the Attorney General. Andrew Johnson vetoed all the Reconstruction Acts because he said they're unconstitutional. Stanberry wrote the opinions on it. They're unconstitutional. Okay? So he basically said, I'm going to read it here. He says, I've already taken a position on the other side. I can't defend these things. If you want to prosecute or, you know, prosecute this, you've got to go hire your own attorney. So the Attorney General refused to defend the constitutionality of Reconstruction. And this forced Stanton and Grant go hire a private attorney. And that's your passing act of Congress that allowed them to do that. Who did they hire? They hired a guy by the name of William Trumbull, a senator, sitting senator, who was an attorney from Illinois. Anybody have any problem with senators we might get from Illinois? Okay, who defended McCardle? Jeremiah Black defended McCardle. Who's Jeremiah Black? He was Chief Justice of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court from 1851 to 55. United States Attorney General from 1857 to 1860. Secretary of State from 60 to 61. Think he knows the law? Think he knows the inner workings of government? He's saying they're unconstitutional. I'm defending McCardle. Okay? I also had another guy who was a heavy hitter at the time by the name of David Dudley Field. David Dudley Field defended McCardle. Who was David Dudley Field's brother? A sitting member of the United States Supreme Court. Another, again, big top dog attorneys defending McCardle, saying the Reconstruction Acts are unconstitutional. I'm going to leave out what I normally show, which is them tearing to shreds this concept of Reconstruction. But they did. They destroyed it. It's unconstitutional. And here is Lyman Trumbull. And his closing argument is ex parte McCardle. He says, the proposition in which I have endeavored to maintain our first, this court has no jurisdiction of the case. You don't have jurisdiction of the case. He never ruled that it was lawful in the Constitution. Never. Okay, so now, isn't this what we want? A case before the Supreme Court with, I mean, powerhouse attorneys destroying it, the other side with no defense at all. I mean, isn't that where we want to be? Absolutely. How much faith do you have in the integrity of the United States Congress?
Not much.
I'm about to give you another reason why you don't want to have all that. Who is he? What's his job? Their position? United States Senate. Where's the United States Supreme Court? Walk away from Capitol Building. Across the street. This was argued for 3 days, United States Supreme Court. And both sides rested. Done. And you notice that he says they don't have jurisdiction under the Act of February 5th, 1866. That's how McCardle got up to the Supreme Court on his habeas corpus. Goes across the street, rallies the troops, and they propose a law that's going to amend the Act of February 5th, 1867. And it's going to take away from the authority of the Supreme Court to rule on any case that might have gotten up there through the Act of February 5th, 1867. And they passed. Congress passed a law that took away the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court to make a ruling on the case.
And that still stands.
Well,
Has anybody ever been in Washington that's truthful?
Where's the power line?
In the
people. As long as we keep deferring our power to them, we need to vote for the right guy. Maybe they'll do the right thing. How many people feel that that's a good way to get changed?
No.
Has it worked?
No.
They all get paid off. Okay. Remember at the very beginning, I said, hey, we got this graph up here? Haven't you been voting year after year after year to change the direction of that graph? How well did voting work?
No.
The Republican landslide of what, 94, 96, whatever year that was? Okay. Hey, contract on America? Yeah. The American people say, hey, we're going down. We want to change the direction. So what they do? They voted. They got what they wanted. What happened? What happens in the graph?
It went on back.
Did it even like level out? Yeah. Or have things gone faster since the 90s? How easily are people manipulated? How many people have heard the phrase, if you don't vote, you shouldn't complain?
Yeah.
That's a lie.
Yep. Well, George Carlin said...
Because... Again, I'm going to get a little ahead of myself here. I'm actually doing something I should be doing later. But when you participate in these states that are created by Reconstruction, you acquiesce to the treason that happened in the 39th Congress did. You said, I accept this destruction, I accept national citizenship, and now when you vote, because you've accepted it, you have no right to complain. You only have a right to complain when you don't vote. Say, that's not my... You have no authority to do it. You only have authority by not voting in that system and saying, that's a criminal act. This is a continuation of a treasonous act. Is not the annulment of a state and its political body and its laws an act of war? What does one government want to do? What does Germany want to do to France? Just have a bunch of people go over there and say, y'all just keep doing what you want to do, you and y'all vote for you? Or no. Your body politic is gone. You're going to have allegiance. It's not going to be to that body. Your allegiance is going to be to Berlin. And we're going to put people over you and tell you what laws you can have and you cannot have. Okay? That's what war is. It's I want to take over that group of people, force them under my laws and not under their laws. That's called conquest. It's not yours anymore. It's mine. And that's what Congress did. North Carolina, it's not yours anymore. It's mine. They stole it. It's a criminal act. Was it authorized by the founders? It's in the Constitution. They have the authority to do this. Okay. Now, I'm going to go. This is going to be a little amusing. Hopefully. Feeling good yet? Cool. Feeling good here. I am going to go to the congressional record and we're going to read McCarville on the floor of the Senate. Talking about this bill he's proposing that's going to take away the Supreme Court's jurisdiction to rule on the Carver case. Okay, so this is out of congressional record, actually cut and pasted right out of congressional record. He said this, in my judgment, there's no such great importance to be attached to it. It's a bill of very little importance, in my judgment. And I wish to say to the Senator from Maryland that the Supreme Court has not decided that any case is pending before it under the Act of February 5th. No such decision has been made, nor I believe any such decision ever would be made. Who argued the case? He did. This is after he's argued the case. He's saying this. There's no case there. He argued it. Because he was challenging jurisdiction. If the court doesn't have jurisdiction, then there is no case. But the court ruled, we've got jurisdiction. So he's in this fantasy of his own mind and making. He says, now there is no such case that is pending in the Supreme Court, and there has been no such case pending in the Supreme Court, the McCardle case. Well, he gets called out. This is Mr. Doodle out of Wisconsin. He's a Democrat. Trumbull's a Republican. Mr. Doodle says, Senator Doodle says this, Mr. President, my honorable President of Illinois seems to think there's no importance in this measure, that it affects nothing and nobody, that there is no case pending in the Supreme Court which this act will affect, that it is a mistake and a delusion on our part to suppose that there is any such bill under the law of 1867. He says, sir, I apprehend that the honorable Senator from Illinois is altogether mistaken in the view which he now presents, that this is a very important measure, and that there is a very important case pending in the Supreme Court under the act which it is now proposed to repeal. The honorable senator himself as counsel in that court, if I am correctly informed, with other counsel, made a motion to dismiss case pending in the Supreme Court, or alleged to be pending, under this act, and the court refused to dismiss it. He's calling him out right there on the Senate floor. You're a liar. I mean, that's what he's saying. That's what these words say. Yeah. You're a liar. He says, we all know, the whole world knows that this case of McCarthy is pending in the Supreme Court. Brought up on appeal on the Act of 1867 from the Circuit Court of Mississippi. Now that case has been argued by eminent counsel, and that it is pending. It involves the constitutionality of those acts which have been passed by Congress. If there be no such case before the court, why does the Honorable Senator desire to pass a bill to take away jurisdiction of a case which does not exist? Mr. President, the truth is, and we may as well look it square in the face, the reason I retyped this is because, as you can see, my copies were getting a little fuzzy. He says, this is because men knew these acts will be decided to be unconstitutional. That is the reason why they desire to take away from the court the consideration of the question. Call him out. Can we get a hooray for Mr. Doolittle? Good God. Call them out. Now, so, where does that leave us? Has it got there since then? Well, there is a book on, it's called The Landmark Case of the Supreme Court. And this case is, and here how it is. This is a modern book talking about this case. And these are the Attorney General Stanberry, Ronald Lee, the attorney involved. It says, while the case was under advisement, Congress passed an act taking away the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court as defined by the Act of February 1867 against the habeas corpus, and the appeal was thereupon dismissed for want of jurisdiction. McCarville was thereupon discharged, and no further attempt has been made to test the constitutionality of the Reconstruction Act. People, that's your remedy. That's your legal remedy. Testing the constitutionality of the Reconstruction Act. Testing the constitutionality of whether Congress has the authority in times of peace to annul states, to reduce them to territories, put conditions on them, to re-enter the Union, and coerce them into ratifying an amendment of the Constitution rather than ratifying it by their own free will. How many people here believe the Reconstruction Act were a lawful, constitutional, lawfully authorized delegation of authority of the United States Congress? Let the record reflect, I see zero hands. How many people here? If what I showed you was true, there's not a story I got off the internet. The Reconstruction Acts are not only unconstitutional, they're tyrannical. There's no authority for Congress to pass those acts. Anybody believe that? I mean, I do.
Yeah.
Let's just read again what the Federalist Paper said. The idea of a national government involves in an authority over the individual citizens and an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. This supremacy is completely vested in Congress. That's where we're at, because of the 14th Amendment and Reconstruction. And remember, this is what James Madison said is not the intention of this Constitution. But that's what we're living under today. We are not, what I'm about is not overthrowing the United States government. It's not about overthrowing the North Carolina state government. We believe that the Reconstruction Act were an act of treason of the 39 colonies. They know the state. Why do we not have lawful states in the American Union? Nobody's participating in it.
Right.
Do we have a right to be citizens of states based upon the Constitution?
Yes.
We're made for citizens of states. But they got rid of it. And there's a lot of people that confuse the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Right there, there's my state citizenship. They changed nothing, is what I hear. Okay? Well, they are a state citizen of that state. What's the body politic of that state? The United States citizens residing there. Are those state citizens? I'm just saying it's a political subdivision of the United States government now, rather than a compact member of a union. It's the exact same thing as a county in a state. It's a political subdivision of the state. Just like saying you're a citizen of the state and of the county wherein you reside. And now I get my sovereignty. The state citizenship that's associated with the 14th Amendment is only for states composed of United States citizens. It's not for states composed of state citizens. Was the Constitution of North Carolina ever changed by the consent of the people of North Carolina? Is it still valid? To be picked up? I believe it is. And that's what we did. How many people here are familiar with the story of Nehemiah? Rebuilding the wall. The cupbearer, Artaxerxes, has a bad day. People tell him Jerusalem's in all sorts of terrible shape. There's a king. The king says, what's wrong? He says, they destroyed the walls and the people were desolate. And so the king says, I'll tell you what, I'll back it. You go build the wall, there's funds, there's people, they go. What happened to Jerusalem? It had been destroyed. The walls had been destroyed. But what was left? The fountain of people and the foundation. We have a foundation. And that's the Constitution. The original Constitution of North Carolina. Because you get the original Constitution of North Carolina put back in place. The original Constitution of South Carolina. Georgia. New York. Ohio. And that puts the United States Constitution back into effect. Because its effect is to protect the rights of states. How many states are out there? One. Okay? If we want to fix this, we've got to say, you know what? You have no authority to do that. I'm going to stand on my right to be a state citizen. It's a legal argument. And all you got to do, state, is where you're lawfully created. Reconstruction is lawful constitutional. What put you in place is lawful constitutional. And if it is, if you can prove all this is a lawful delegation of authority, I will accept you. But I have no legal obligation to be a participant in a crime and to turn my back on a crime. And what is the crime? Treason. The annulling of the state and the subjugation of the American people to a government and laws not of their willing consent. Because that is exactly what was just imposed on King North Carolina. Exactly what was imposed on him. You feeling good yet?
Not yet.
Let's look at what happened in North Carolina. This is Reconstruction North Carolina. I just want to show this. What is this right here? This is a letter dated July 1st, 1868 from the governor of North Carolina John Moore to the governor of North Carolina, W.W. Holden, William Woods Holden, which is a Reconstruction governor, one put in place by this government, and is the only North Carolina governor that's ever been impeached, by the way. Just let you know that his good moral character followed him. Why is this date, July 1st, 1868, important? When did the state of North Carolina, that's in operation today, when did it enter the American Union? June 25th, 1868. How many states called the state of North Carolina have entered the American Union? Two. One is the 12th state, and if you go by order, one is the 39th state. It entered on June 25th, 1868, and the president vetoed it. Said, you can't do this. Congress had a supermajority, passed it over his veto. This is the surrender letter of the state of North Carolina. We're surrendered. What year is this? When was the war? 61 to 65. When was peace declared? 66. 2 years after peace is declared, we're surrendering the government of North Carolina. That makes sense to anybody? Let's read the text of this. Here it is in typed out, but we're just going to take a little section out of it. Well, actually, I'm going to go back up there. I'm going to bring you over to that. He says, yesterday morning I was verbally notified by Chief Justice Pearson that in obedience to a telegram from General Canning, he would today at 10 a.m. administer you the oath required preliminary to your entering upon discharge of duty to the civil governor of the state, and that thereupon you would demand possession of what?
My office.
This is the governor of North Carolina saying you're going to demand possession of my office, and who's going to put you there? General Cameron. Is he being put in place by re-election to the consent of the people? He says, I intimated to the judge my opinion that such proceeding was premature, even under the Reconstruction legislation of Congress, and that I should probably decline to surrender the office to you. So now, yesterday evening, I received from Colonel Williams, Commandant of this military post, an extract from General Order No. 120 of General Canby as follows, and this is the extract. To facilitate the organization of the new state government, new state, not the continuation of the old state, it's to facilitate the organization of the new state government, the following appointments are made to be Governor of North Carolina, W.W. Holden, Governor-elect, Jonathan Work, removed. The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Tyler Caldwell, Lieutenant Governor, blah, 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 to take effect July 1st, 1868, on the meeting of the General Assembly of North Carolina. And when is this? July 1st. This is the last paragraph. He says, I do not recognize the validity of the late election on which you and those cooperating with you claimed the investment in the civil government state. You have no evidence of your election, save the certificate of a Major General of the United States Army. I regard all of you as, in effect, appointees of the military power of the United States, and not as deriving your power from the consent of those you claim to govern. Knowing, however, that you are backed by military force here, which I could not resist if I would, I do not deem it necessary to offer a futile opposition, but vacate the office without the ceremony of actual eviction, offering no further opposition than this, my protest. I would submit to actual expulsion in order to bring before the Supreme Court of the United States the question as to the constitutionality of the legislation under which you claim to be the rightful governor of the state if the past action of that tribunal were any hope of speedy trial. How much trust does he have in the Supreme Court? Should he have any trust in the Supreme Court by this time? Okay, I don't need any help. I can see that. Because I surrendered the office to you under what I deem military duress, without stopping at the occasion would well justify a comment upon the singular coincidence that a present state government is surrendered as about legality to him whose own official sanction of 3 years ago declared valid. Wow.
So this governor was actually elected by
There's a couple things going, and they had the Reconstruction plans. They had the presidential Reconstruction plan. I'm personally against all the Reconstruction plans because the federal government had no authority to manipulate what was going on in the state. But they chose to do that anyway. But what this signifies is even in the encumbered position he was in under that presidential Reconstruction that started this, and then it went to congressional Reconstruction. This is the formal change from the one body politic to the other, from the one constitution to the other. He is still operating, the state of North Carolina is still operating in an encumbered position under the original constitution of North Carolina. And this is the change where they went to that new state, is what this represents.
And they put a new governor in under that new state.
Well, he was elected already, W.W. Holman, William Woods Holman. Okay. Go look him up, good guy. Now, he mentions the military order of 120 issued by General Canby. There it is. This is what changed the government of North Carolina. A military order.
Right.
How many people were taught this?
No.
Is this how you change governments of a free people? A military order against the consent of the people?
No.
What do you call this? A coup. A military coup. The overthrow of one government and to supplant it with another. Another power. Where was the sovereignty reside in North Carolina originally? In the people of North Carolina. Where does it reside when it was switched? Congress. Sovereignty was switched. Who gets the rule? Switched. Okay? That's why the Bill of Rights, the limitations that were on the federal government on religion, applies to the state. This new state can't have, because it's all federal, it's all national, it can't have laws about religion. A state is defined by the Tao. This is the Tao wrote Laws of Nations. This is what our founders, he wrote some international law. That's what our founders relied on. A state is defined by the Tao. They have body politic. Remember I talked about the word body politic? Or a society of men united together to promote their safety and advantage by means of their union, who are guided and directed by the public political authority, the government. The government is the ligament that holds the political society together, and when that is destroyed, the society as a political body is dissolved. Okay? The original body politic was the people of North Carolina. Freedmen of North Carolina. That was body politic. And gathered by and put in operation by the North Carolina government. Reconstruction got rid of that body politic. North Carolinians can't vote. That is not the government for North Carolinians. It's the government for United States citizens residing in North Carolina.
Not
they dissolved it. That's war. My position again, 39th Congress committed treason. These acts to dissolve body politics and subjugate the people is not what the founders were about. Go back. There. One of the biggest problems people have today is that they believe that the cause of these usurpations, like the king ruling or take your place in whatever ruling you did, are based upon a Supreme Court, and they call it what they call judicial. Judicial activism. That they're operating outside their bounds. They have no authority to do that. Does the Supreme Court have authority to make the ruling that it made? Yes. Based upon the legitimacy of the 14th Amendment Reconstruction. If that's the foundation, citizenship is nationalized, the Supreme Court's making all the right rules. We're confused. We're the ones that don't understand why. Okay? So it's not the Supreme Court. Where's the problem lying? Can Congress do anything to change this? They can't do anything about it. They're elected by it. They are elected to support that Constitution as they see it. Who's maintaining this state of affairs?
We do when we vote.
We do when we vote. What's the one thing? What's violated when someone commits treason? Is that offense? Public trust, your oath, something you have a duty to, you have allegiance to. Okay? Were Germans, were the Japanese committing treason when they bombed Pearl Harbor? No. They had no loyalty trust to the United States government. They were just waging war. When you have allegiance to something, when you have an oath to something, you commit treason when you violate your trust. When you violate that, when you wage war, when you try to subvert, overthrow, change that. So what must happen for you to commit treason? You have to have a duty. You have to have an oath. On every voter registration application in North Carolina, you certify under penalty of perjury, class one felony, that you're a United States citizen. You made a legal document. I mean, United States citizen. How many people have felt proud of the United States citizen? I used to.
Yeah.
Until I started figuring it out. I'm North Carolina. I am a citizen of one of several United States. Probably a citizen of this great nation and what was founded. Absolutely proud of that. But we got treason going on, and it's happening because of two things. One is too long. With knowledge comes responsibility. And you've got to make a choice. Every person's got to make a choice of what do I recognize as valid. You've got to make a choice. It is the 39th state created by Congress. Called North Carolina valid, lawful, entitled to support, or is it 12th state? That entered as a 12th state. Valid, one of those supplanted by Reconstruction. You've got to make a moral choice. Which one's lawful, and which one is due lawful obedience? Which one do I support? Because what keeps the treason going is people giving aid and comfort to that treason. I'm going to support it. Oh, it's too tough to go over there. I'm just going to turn my back. I'm going to support. I'm going to recognize treason as the foundation of this country. Not the Declaration of Independence, but the overthrow of everything this nation is founded on. But we've got to be practical. We've got to be discerning. We don't want people to just jump on board. Helter Skelter, and this is a movement of knowledge. This is a movement of discernment. This is a movement of people coming together. Let's counsel. Let's figure out what's going on and what can we do here. How can we help each other? How can we change this? Or I've got a choice and I can say, you know what? I'm just going to pretend I didn't see it. I'm going to go back over here and pretend the state of affairs. And then I'm just going to complain about these rulings like what happened in the game of North Carolina. They shouldn't do that. They have no right to do that. Yeah, they do. Now, the issue is, I want people to help. What did we do? What is it that we did? 1990, I figured all this stuff out in 1990. Now, all this stuff figured out. And I was trying to say, you know what the remedy is? Let's reestablish the state. The reason we don't have lawful government is because nobody's participating in it. We need participants. And I finally rustled together a group of people and we signed a Declaration of Reestablishment. We said we're going to reestablish the original. We're not creating something new. We're not creating a new state. We're just reestablishing the body politic that was removed by the Reconstruction Acts. And we recognize the constitutional laws of North Carolina are passed by North Carolinians all the way to the time that it was dissolved. All those were lawful acts of my forebears. All that's lawful. I have no right to change it. I'm not trying to put anything else in place. But I have a duty to the law. I have a duty to the knowledge. I have a duty to what I know. We did a declaration of reestablishment at the time we sent it to Bill Clinton. And we sent it to Jim Hunt. We're reestablishing the government of North Carolina. We don't recognize Reconstruction as law. How many people think that's a bold move? How many people think they feel real comfortable doing that? Wasn't a comfortable feeling, but it was necessary. Because who has standing to sue in court? Who has standing? Who's injured by the Reconstruction Acts?
Citizens.
What citizens?
State citizens.
United States citizens are beneficiaries. They're created by Reconstruction. You're not damaged. You get, you know, welfare and, I mean, you get all sorts of benefits. United States citizens have bunches of stuff. You get benefits. State citizens are damaged. So who's the only people that can bring, that can be a part of and say, I was damaged? State citizens. So we need a declaration of reestablishment. We're reestablishing the body politic. And we're going to start, you know, what's a state government? What's a constitution? The constitution is a piece of paper. What makes a constitution alive? Citizens. People holding the offices. What I did is I said, I don't recognize the state of North Carolina that's out there they lawfully created. It's illegitimate. I can prove it. I have no obligation to go against my conscience and accept a fraud as legitimate. So, I don't recognize their authority to issue a driver's license. I haven't had a driver's license for 19 years. That doesn't slow me down. I drive. I go into court. And my position is, I don't think you lawfully created to sit there and have to do to issue driver's licenses to state citizens. Where did the United States citizens residing in North Carolina get authority to exercise jurisdiction over the soil of North Carolina over the people of North Carolina? Reconstruction training. Well, I think that's unconstitutional and it hasn't been tested yet. Remember, it's been sitting there. Okay? We've been out there testing. We got cases all in the courts on this. But I'm not asking for everyone to get rid of the driver's license. Not asking. Because this truly is a war. It's a war of subjugation. It's a war of the overthrow of the foundation of this country. The beauty of it is, it's just a legal war. It's just a legal war. You don't have to get arms. It's just prove your law. Now, how can you help? Now, how many people are begging and going, what can I do to help? How many eager participants?
Do we have a soil committee?
What we're going to do is, anytime you have a war, you need people with all sorts of talents. You need people all over the place. Oh, I want to finish one thing. Is what keeps this in place is the local courts. These local courts, because we can go into them, and they're the ones that say, we're not going to address. Excuse me, what's the function of court when you have conflict of law? You've got to address it. The whole function of court is that when you have a conflict, they're going to be a fair and impartial arbitrator, so there is no necessity of violence. The whole function of court is to be just. Not to be a tool of tyranny, to maintain a treason. It's supposed to be just. into the court of justice, they said, you can't bring that issue in here. Is that a court of justice?
No.
How many times does the state of North Carolina need to prove it's lawfully created?
Once.
Just once. It's proved lawfully created. They told me that takes too much time, that's too many resources. I mean, we got so many excuses from the courts. Excuse me. I can go sit there. I say, okay, here's the Treaty of Paris that transferred the sovereignty of the soil over to the people of North Carolina. Here's their constitution. This is the body. The law. It ain't hard to prove you're a law state. Unless you're in a law state. And then it takes a lot of resources to try to have some sort of legal gymnastics to prove your law. There's stuff. We need people who are willing to talk about us in a favorable way. Say, you know what? I agree with you. We need people to go and research this and say, is this true or not? We need people who are willing to say, you know what? Those people have got a lot on their plate. I can help them financially. We need people who can say, you know what? I boss. I can write about this. I've heard the guy. I've seen it. This is real. And if we can get that snowball going, people, we can get this country. Because what's our choice? Sit on our hands and ride the graph. And if you're going to ride that graph that I put up in the very beginning, what are you leaving your children as inheritance? Are you a good father? Dad, what did you do when you knew about this? Nothing. We say we're the land of the free and the home of the blind.
Brave.
It's real easy being brave when there's nothing scary in front of us. We've been knowing this since 1997. We've had no one in prison. We've had a couple little overnight stays in jail. Not a big, hey, what did our founders do? Look at Valley Forge. Look at Bloody Footprints. Look at Storming the Hessian. Look at... I'm not asking us to do any of that. Let's just stand up for what is morally right. Let's stand up for a God of truth. The Lord... What are we supposed to do with the truth? What's the one thing that we... In this mess we live in, when we listen to the news and we see someone that finally stands up against the political correctness, how does that feel to you?
Good.
It's good. Because they're standing up for the truth. It feels good when people see people standing up for the truth. What does the Lord want us to do with the truth? Stand up for it. Are we supposed to be salt and light out there? I mean, don't we know the world going to hell in a handbasket? Why? There's no truth out there. It's all deception and lies. What do they need? They need the truth. Here's what's happened, people. We have a duty to the truth.
He said be a watchman.
We got to be a watchman. And that's, quite honestly, I feel that's part of my role here. What's a watchman supposed to do? I'm on the wall. I'm supposed to tell you when danger's coming.
Right.
Okay. Because blood's on somebody's hands. If I don't do my job and tell people there's a danger out there, whose hands are blood on? Mine. If I tell you there's a danger out there and you do nothing, whose blood? Your hand. What blood do we have going on out there? Anybody ever heard of Roe versus Wade? We get lawful government back in place. That blood flow stops. We get that put back in place. We get a moral foundation again. How many people want to see a moral foundation hand that off to our children?
Yeah.
People, I'm telling you, we can do it.
Yeah.
We're looking for help. We're looking for resources. We're looking for people who will write about us, talk about us, join us, finance us. We need help. How much money did Americans United get from the city of King? $500,000. We actually got before the United States Supreme Court on this issue in 2012. We got the issue of the Constitution now and Reconstruction to the Supreme Court. No lawyers, nothing. Carpenters, bloggers, working 8 hours a day, coming home, keeping families going. We got to the Supreme Court. They said we're not going to take it up after sitting on it about 4 months. Well, I think June, from February to June. Because they get, 5,000 cases a year, and they only decide about 30, they got to figure out which ones are most important. And obviously, they don't think this one's real important. But if you get enough people standing in the streets, put the pressure on them. Now, I got a question. Do the illegal immigrants get people in the streets and put pressure on people? Do they believe in their cause? Are they getting what they want?
Yeah.
Gay rights rally. Can they get people in the streets? Do they believe in their cause? Are they succeeding?
Yeah.
Muslims. They're working.
They're going
forward. Okay. Who here is willing to get in the streets over lawful government? Just supporting it. Man, I'm telling you, this is more exciting than you can imagine if we can get the ball rolling. We've had a dedicated group of people who have been carrying this torch. Someone's getting tired. We just had a court case in Mecklenburg County that was worked for a year and a half. They start playing hardball. We're putting this brief in, say, about Reconstruction. They said, move. Not an issue. State, once it enters the union, it resolves all that stuff. What you're bringing up is garbage. We're going to prosecute. To me, that's getting it to come to the original treason, these lower courts. You know what they did last week? Dismissed all charges. Guy doesn't have a license, I don't know what he had. Registration, I can't remember. He had some sort of minor, we assume minor stuff. We're not going into murder, trying to say, no jurisdiction. We're going in there, write the license, we make it register. Parking tickets. It's great. It's a beautiful argument. It's a beautiful argument. Praise the Lord for that, too. Praise the Lord for how easy it is for us to get this country back from what it was. So, what I'd like you to do is, you got a little action card here. I would love to get back and talk to people who want to know more and really learn more about this. We're an educational group to get people educated to take this country back. If you can help us out financially, physically, spread the word, we're more than willing to do that. And the phone number on that America's Remedy card is wrong. The number on that should be 704-763-2925. 704-763-2925. I make myself available. Anybody want to help me offset my costs for coming up here today? There's no charge for this, but definitely accept donations. I really appreciate everybody for coming out of this night. How many people feel that you were presented with something you hadn't known, and that it's valuable, and that we can do something with this? Freedom, the warm body, willing to speak.